Oh yeah, I keep forgetting.
Okay, switch to Audio Hijack, which is a different application, which works very well. Okay, we're recording again. Don't lean into the mics. Just sit the way you're gonna sit when you're talking, because otherwise it's like a false measure. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Okay. Eric, check one.
Sarah, check two.
Antonia, check two.
Other Eric, check three and four.
Amazing. Okay. We'll save that. Oh, we don't even want that. Recordings. Now we're going to go back to MacBook Pro speakers. This doesn't work, we'll just go to...
Okay, we're recording it.
Okay, so my mic's good.
Don't lean into the mic.
It's good device.
So it's one of the mic... It's the mics. Something about one of these mics is stupid.
Mm-hmm. Other Eric, check three and four.
Okay.
Yep, that's false.
Okay.
So it's your mic, but this is what we got last time, right? Your mic didn't work. And
Antonia, check two.
So our mics are working, your mics aren't, which is super good. Super duper annoying. Okay. So let's just try to plug and unplug and see. Mm-hmm. See if that gives us the solutions we need. Yeah, hold on, just get out of your way there.
Yours weren't working.
This is Sarah's mic.
This looks legit, right? Number.
Man.
Cool name.
First name, number, last name, number.
It's not a smart way to contact someone.
No.
Mm-mm.
No, not really.
Testing Sarah's mic. Testing Sarah's mic. Okay. Eric, let's test yours now. We gotta find it.
I plugged in my headphones too, just to see if that makes any difference.
Can you hear it?
Yep.
You can hear you?
Yep.
Okay, great. Say something.
Testing, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Thank you. That's the creepy one again.
You had the headphones in the first one, because the second one was okay.
Give it one more try, please.
Wait, testing 1, 2, 1, 2.
Okay.
The second one was okay?
Yeah, the second one was okay.
So, is that mic?
Maybe you should, like, unplug the headphones.
What about now?
Want to try it now?
Testing.
Hold on. Go for it.
Testing, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Okay, that's okay. Last time, all I did was Sarah's is plug it in, unplug it.
Yeah,
so
let's do that.
Try that one.
All right.
Oh. Not quite ready yet.
Testing.
Mm-mm.
Testing.
Oh, stand by, please.
Testing. Testing.
Okay, go for it.
Testing, 1, 2, 1, 2. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Okay. So, can we do, can you hear me? We'll do one more with the whole group.
Yeah, for sure.
And then we'll see if they all come in, and then if they do, then...
Unplug and unplugging.
That would be very, that would be very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
That seems to work.
Is everyone's thing about there?
Yeah.
Okay, sweet. Let's go. Eric number one, checking in.
Hi, it's Sarah.
Antonia, checking three.
Eric Moore, checking in. Welcome to Movie Phone. Oh,
I just wanted to announce the traffic. How was this?
Surprisingly, Tinny, actually.
Eric number one, checking in. Eric number one.
It's everyone picking me up. That's okay, though.
Hi, it's Sarah.
Okay.
Eric number one, checking in.
Eric
number one, checking in.
Eric Moore, checking in.
Wow.
Eric Moore, checking in.
Having it up to you makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
I,
no. Oh my god.
Hey, our intro. It started, everybody. It started. I can put mine on the
No. No, I love that yours comes in loud and clear.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Number 1.
Okay, so everyone is good.
Yeah.
Everyone is good.
Like,
we're,
don't
we're working.
Touch it.
Yeah, we're working. And we have like a backup here recording. Okay.
Beautiful.
Okay. Do you want to introduce yourselves rather than me just talk about three people for like just kind of guess? So you can do as much as you want or as little as you want. Doesn't really matter. But whatever you're comfortable with in terms of an intro.
Sure.
Did you write one into the Google Doc?
No.
No. So it can be quick. Like some people, it's like literally one sentence. Like this is what I do. This is where I work. And some people choose to do something more comprehensive. And honestly, it's up to you. I know, Eric, we were going to talk about your career path, and everyone can talk about their career path, but the focus is the it's definitely the office hours. So,
okay, cool.
If that's cool with you.
Yep.
Sweet. Okay, good. I feel like slightly out of sorts, but I think that should be fine, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Everything we say, like you, all three of you have a final cut privilege. Of course, I won't air anything until you approve it. Sometimes people have like said things and been like, oh, there's an NDA, I wasn't allowed to say that. Sometimes people just like insulted someone. Like, so whatever, you never really know, right? Like you go home and you're like, oh, why did I say that? Maybe you made fun of Chris Doe and he's going to come after you.
That's right.
With this crew of photographers. So you never know.
It could be good publicity.
It could be. Yeah, it could be. Beef is good on social, so great.
But we'll avoid.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know your last name.
Bolaños.
Okay, I need to read it to to say it. So I'm gonna look it up. Oh, that must be why it kills the audio. That's smart. It kills the audio when you start the recording. That's why I couldn't play back our recordings. I had to manually turn on the audio, but it kills it so that nothing comes up on your thing and ruins your recording.
That is smart. I just put my phone on airplane mode.
Yeah. Oh, no, I can't do that.
Numero,
right.
Numero.
Yeah, you're going to call from your mom again. When it's. Do you want me to lead? Do you want me to go first?
Sure.
Or have we started?
No. Are you working at Emblem or
no?
You just
hopefully.
Been using the office hours.
She came in and met with us.
Okay.
Out of the blue, as a
just for like
student
meet him
looking
and
for,
yeah.
Okay.
She's
amazing.
A case study in exactly what office hours is for.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Okay, great, sweet, good. Okay, we are recording now.
Great.
Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining another episode of Whiteboard Podcast. We have three guests today. We have Eric Moore from Made by Emblem. We have Maria Bolaños, who is a Hummer College student. And we have Sarah Morgado, who is also from Made by Emblem. And why don't we just start with some introductions. Eric, would you like to go first?
Sure. Thanks for having me on the show, on the podcast. My name is Eric. I am the owner and creative director at Made by Emblem. We are a strategic design studio here in Toronto, and excited to talk about everything that we do at Made by Emblem.
Especially excited to talk about office hours.
That's right, office hours.
That's amazing, which is actually why we've got Maria here today. Maria, would you like to introduce yourself?
So, hello everyone, my name is Maria. I'm a student of Humber College in Advertising and Marketing Communication. I'm from Colombia, and I studied business administration in my home country.
Sarah is here today as well. Sarah is over at Made by Emblem and a former grad. So thank you, Sarah.
Hi, thanks, Eric, for having us. I'm really excited to see where this conversation goes. Yeah, I graduated from Humber's advertising and graphic design program this year, and I landed an internship at Made by Emblem pretty soon after, and I'm working there as their graphic designer / social media manager or person. Yeah.
Amazing. Yes. Well, it's again, that's kind of how it is. You just kind of do a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess we all do. So, great. So, one of the reasons this podcast exists is to cover topics in that transition from student into working in the industry. And there's like so many questions that are surrounding that transition, and the education system, which is me, is not always like perfectly equipped to answer all those questions. And so Eric Moore has started a project which he is calling Office Hours.
That's right.
And I'd love to hear more about Office Hours.
So I love what you're doing on the podcast here, and it's very much in line with how Office Hours came to be. We have met with students who were applying for internships and entry-level designer positions over the years, and we felt like there were really common questions that were being asked and feedback that these students really appreciated. So we wanted to package this into something that we could offer to our community and give back to our design community in some way, which was offering an informal, in-person opportunity to talk about anything design and industry related. So people can book 20 minutes with anybody on the team. It's an opportunity, like I said, it's very informal. There's no, it strips away that idea of an interview, which is a lot of stress and anxiety about that. And so whether people want to talk about their portfolios, want to talk about the industry and titles of jobs that they might be interested in, what those look like, and some of the expectations of employers once they get into the workforce, we can talk casually about some of those things and give advice where we can, or even just ask questions that people haven't considered that might lead them to a different either career path or building of their portfolio in a different way.
Brilliant. Wow, that's cool. And why start this? What are your motivations?
Honestly, it's about finding a way to give back to the design community. So when we've talked about this with a number of different people in different agencies and different in education and different sectors, that this sort of information is held behind these closed doors of what's actually happening in the industry. So we wanted to pull the curtain back a little bit on some of that and make it a little less stressful for, and I want to emphasize that it's not just students. While students are a big I think students get a lot out of office hours of what we provide. We also meet with photographers that are looking to, get some feedback on their portfolio and how they want to change their website to better attract different kinds of work. I've talked to people that are looking to start their own business, go from being a freelancer to starting a design firm or a small agency, whatever it might be. But for students in particular, I think it's a really, it's a way for us to say, look, it's not as scary out there as it may seem, and we can make it a little less scary by talking about some of the elements that you are so unsure about. And so if we can help shed some light on some of those things and make it a little less scary about talking to people who are in the industry about what some of those expectations are, then it makes us feel like we've given something back. So, yeah.
That's amazing. I'm sure it's really appreciated. I wish I had something like that when I was coming up to school, because
yeah,
I remember having no idea. And you look back on your portfolio when you graduated and you're like, this was in no way crafted to get the career I wanted. But you don't even think about that. You just think, I'll put my work up for the world and I'll tell them what I want and they'll decide if they want to hire me to do that work. But it's not that simple.
Yeah.
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 It's not that simple.
Well, and I think that also it's there is this, I think that office hours kind of targets the sweet spot between when you're working with your instructors, they give you a certain kind of feedback on your work. There isn't, the risk level isn't quite as high as your first week on the job when you have to design something, let's say, and your manager or your boss says, you know, that's not going to work. You've got to do something different. And so there's got to be somewhere in between those two scenarios. And that's where I feel like we had somebody come in the other day who was a student. He's also doing some freelance work. And so he said, I've got a pitch deck that I'm sending to a client. I'd really like your team's feedback on it. And I said, well, do you want to come in and pitch it to the team? Just book an office hours and you can pitch it. So he came in and we all sat around and he pitched this deck to us. And what he got out of it was, he was like, this is great because there's no pressure. I'm not actually trying to sell this thing to you. You're not the client. And I'm not doing it for school, but I'm getting a third party, like an outsider's perspective on the work I'm doing, how the communication in this deck can be adjusted to better sell the concept that I'm presenting. And so that I thought was a really great win for, as an example of what this office hours can do.
Yeah. Honest with no pressure is not a thing that exists in design, right? So like to create that is like pretty, I don't know, it's pretty awesome because everything is like, there's strings attached with education and grading and everything. And it's difficult sometimes to give feedback that is also honest while still being productive and not making people feel cornered, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing too is that I don't think that when students come in for one, books one of these office hours, we all, and again, they can book 20 minutes with anybody, there's six of us on our team. And so there's myself, I'm a creative director, I'm a business owner, my background is in fine art and illustration and design. There's our associate creative director, our senior designer, our junior designer, our project manager, so people can pick who they want to talk to. And so my hope is they'll get something different no matter who they talk to. But also, it's not just about showing your work and getting a harsh critique from an outside source. It's also often what we'll do is just ask questions. So, you know, why are you here? What do you want to talk about? What do you feel is standing in the way of you being able to do what you want to do, whether that's your job or whether that's your creative practice, whether it's your how the design world fits into your life. Like, it can be big questions. It can be kind of like therapy, right? Like, it's a little bit of like, okay, you're in this really crazy time in your life, especially for students, and it's like, okay, how can we help make it a little less crazy? How can we ask you questions that then you can answer and you can find out for yourself what the path is in front of you? Hope that's what it is. So that's why I think it's great that Maria's here, because she has just done the office hours recently, and I'm interested to hear what she thinks of that.
Yeah, Maria, I'd love to hear what's your reaction to all this.
So, well, like, in the professional practice course, they offer like the option to book the office hours. Like, I don't know how they get it, but they send it to us, and then like we can pick like the people. So like, I saw that you were like the owner, so it was like, okay, I just want to meet him. Like, in my head was like, I don't know, like, if I'm going to ask him like about my resume or whatever, my portfolio, nothing. I just want to meet him. And there is like a box that you have to text, like, what do you want to know? Like, something. And it was like, nothing. I didn't put anything. So when I met him, like, he was like, I didn't see nothing in the textbook. So I was just, yes, because I just want to meet him. And like, just want to know, like, to break that thing that you have in your head, that maybe because he's the owner, so you don't know how to talk to him, and maybe it's going to be something scary, or you don't know like who is the person. Maybe you think that it's someone like very rude, but when you go there and it's like a very friendly environment, like when you went to the office and everything is like open, and like when you go, like, there is no reception, it's just like a living room, so it's like you feel like in a different place. Like, you are like, okay, this is not something that I'm going to be scared. And when I met you, like, it was completely different, like, what is in my head. So I did it because I want to stop, like, feeling that it's going to be, like, very weird, very formal, and, yeah, I did it because of that. Not because I was looking for another thing, like, regarding, like, my, like, the college and all that experience. It's, like, to break that, like, fear that I had in my mind. And also, I did another appointment with Marika, but it was completely different because it was online. I don't like online things. I prefer to be in person, to talk with the people, to show the face. And when it, like, I don't take, like, online courses, nothing. I prefer, like, to do everything in person. And it was completely different. Like, you cannot connect with the person if you do it online. So I feel like the difference between, like, both meetings. So I prefer, like, and I think the office hours, it's, like, very useful for you, like, as a student, to stop feeling the fear, and that you can have, like, something good. It's just, like, to flow, but do something, but flow.
Nice. That's great. That's exactly, that's to hear you talk about it in that way, that it just takes the fear out of going and talking to somebody in the industry, that makes it all worth it. That's exactly what we're trying to do.
Some of my friends, they were scared to book the appointment with you because you were the owner.
Right. Yeah.
So no one wants to do it. I was the first person. I saw, like, the first meeting, I was like, okay, I'm going that day. And everyone was like, why you did it? Like, what do you mean that why I did it? Like, I just, like, it's just a person. Like, yes. To remove that the stereotype that he's the owner, he's going to be rude, mad, and he's not going to have, like, time for you. It's like, just, like, go. Yeah.
Well, we had somebody who met with the associate creative director and said, why are you doing this? I was kind of grilling him about, like, why are you looking for, you're looking, this is your way of looking for talent, right? You're looking for interns, you're looking for designers, you're looking for, and we're like, no, we're actually offering something. And he was like, he just couldn't wrap his head around it. He was like, there's something wrong here. There's, like, you can't, this, like, there should be more barriers. Why are there more barriers? So, yeah, this idea that it's like you can talk to the people who are in the industry. Yeah, I mean, it's basically like going to an event or going to a party where you can walk up to somebody and talk to somebody. Like, we were just at the art director's ADCC's event, and it's hard to go up and talk to people. Mm-hmm. And so this is just a way that it's almost like you can book that bumping into somebody and having a 20-minute conversation with them. So.
Yeah, I guess some corners of this industry get, like, a bit of a bad rap for being unfriendly, which is completely unjustified. There are some people who are mean, I guess, but, like, overall, it's, like, a super friendly industry, and, like, where everyone just wants to have a fun time. And I think also, like, if there is a motivation, maybe I'm wrong, Eric, you can tell me, if there is a motivation, it's just that, like, at some point people realize that if you put back into, like, systems, you get more out of them. So, you know, high tide floats all boats, and it's nice. So it's great to see that you're doing that, because that's something I believe. So anytime someone's putting back in, then it just makes everyone's life better, and it all comes back. So
that's how I learned. I didn't go to school for graphic design or marketing or advertising or any of this stuff. So I studied fine art. And when I got into the design world, I was really, really lucky to be offered sort of a paid internship, kind of working, like, learning on the job kind of jobs. And that's how I built my career. So it was those jumping off points of some really, really great individuals that took a chance on me. And so that's why I feel like, from a personal standpoint, I really want to make sure that if there's anything that I can do to help out those people that are starting their careers, or break down some of those barriers between, you know, people starting, you know, starting off on the right foot. So
what's the story from fine arts degree to industry? What's, like, that little gap? What happened?
I love my kids, but we had kids.
I see.
And I was working as a... I don't know. I could answer that differently. but you might have to strike that off.
You have final cut.
No.
You have final cut.
I was working as a I was represented by galleries, and I was showing a lot of work. I was selling a lot of work, and I was I thought I would just be a painter for the rest of my life. And then being a painter is really uncertain in terms of
income. So when my wife and I had kids, I decided that I wanted to do something that seemed a little bit more stable, and so I started doing illustration work. So I thought that would be the right transition from like paintings to paintings that people are buying ahead of time, and then that led into graphic design work. And then, like I said, I was offered a couple of jobs where I basically said, I don't know how to do any of this stuff. And this woman, Marianne von der Leygraf, was like, it's fine, just come in, work. Every day I'm going to give you an assignment. You just have to figure it out by the end of the day. And if anybody asks, tell them you know what you're doing. and so I did that for 2 years, and I learned a ton that way. And then I started getting into magazines and custom publishing, and then sort of over a few years, but then became a creative director where I was overseeing a number of different magazines, all for corporate clients, so speaking the language of marketing through the format of magazines. And then I went off on my own and realized that I am better as a leader of a group of talented people than relying on my own design chops. So I started Made by Emblem. And then it's been growing over the last number of years. And here we are. And now we do much more. Like I said, my background was in, like, the bulk of my work was in magazines. And then it slowly changed into more marketing and advertising. And now we had two campaigns that were in market for Pearson Airport this summer, billboard and bus shelter ads. And that was kind of a nice, it was like, oh, wow, my stuff is, our work is on billboards. That's really exciting. So it's nice that it's constantly evolving, but it all comes from a place of visual communication, really. So
yeah, I feel like as in the education system, especially in college level, we really do undersell the value of like just basic art things like color and composition,
right?
And like where the eye goes, and it's unfortunate because we feel like we don't have time because it's like software, and these sort of fundamentals kind of get glossed over. But I do see lots of people coming from fine art. My high school art teacher was a graphic designer, and he actually started, I don't know if anybody remembers like the 70s or the 80s, but if you were selling cigarettes, it was always like a painted pack of cigarettes on a really nice looking table in a ski chalet with a fire in the background, and they were like laid out and open, and like two or three cigarettes were like come up. He used to paint those. But that was graphic design.
Yeah.
Right? That was graphic design. And then you paste up and get your letters set and, you know, make the whole composition. So I don't know. I think there's something about that training that really translates. And Sarah, also coming from the fine art world,
mm-hmm.
and a very strong designer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I attended OCAD's illustration program, and I always had a passion and interest in the arts, but I also had that mindset similar to Eric's, where I wanted something that felt more stable, more reliable. And I became interested in graphic design after graduating from OCAD's program. I felt like I had garnered like a sense of those fundamentals you're talking about composition, about color theory, and I thought that kind of translates well into graphic design. It's part of the world of visual communication, and doing some research, I knew I wanted something that was had a bit more regiment to it, so I knew like a school program would make sense for me. Found Humber's advertising and graphic design program, and I felt like the logical step in my career progress. So I've always appreciated that background in illustration, in strategically thinking about your placement of items and the placement, but also the meaning behind whatever items you're choosing. It's all a way of visually communicating a message or a story. And so I just tried to take that same mindset and bring it over into design. And my creativity as well, that also helps, yeah.
And that, not being afraid of an empty page.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or being afraid, but knowing what to do.
Knowing it's going to be ugly a lot of times.
Yeah.
Just, you've got to get through the ugly phase and maybe something.
Well, and there's something about, I have been accused of hiring people that sketch things out. So, there is something about seeing somebody grab a piece of paper and a pencil to actually, whether it's a, you know, it's a magazine layout or it's a billboard ad or it's like a, whatever it is that we're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
And
it can all start with a pen and paper. Yeah.
Yeah. We need more of that. We need more of that at every level. Because we were just working on a project where it's an 8-page, it's a pitch book instead of like a deck. It's a book that will be printed and bound and handed to a client. And students, they didn't even really know where to start. And I was like, pick up a pencil, fold up 8 pages, and start writing what needs to be on each page. And it was just like, again, because everything goes, the default is to jump into software. That's where people, we got this thing where it's like, that's where it starts with, that's where it starts. And it's not where it starts. Design happens in your brain, and layout happens in software. Maybe it's kind of, we're missing that a little bit now. You know, Maria was saying we're missing, we're not in person as much anymore, and there's so much value in that. Even though I love online stuff, including sometimes meetings, but not always. But we're definitely missing it, and I think it's probably not a good thing.
I think it's part of the social, everything, in general now. Because, when I started university, it was in 2014. And, everybody has a notebook. And you were with your pen. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody has computers.
Mm-hmm.
No one is worried about to write something. The people just hear the teacher, and we have the slides on the computer. So no one is worried about, to take notes.
Yeah.
So I think that doesn't help. So when someone says, we have to do a sketch, so they just put, pictures from Google. So that's not actually a sketch, but I think it's something it's cultural right now. And it's the same thing, for example, with kids, it's they are using phones and iPads and computers, so they don't spend the time painting something. So I think it's going to be even worse in a few years, because they are not going to use a pen and a notebook. Now I just have one person in the classroom who takes notes in a notebook. Just one person, and we are 30.
There's a bunch of data about how the actual writing down of how it stays in your brain and how recall is much better when you actually write something down with it. And I've seen, there's a great visual of somebody, you can write it down and then write the next word directly on top of it. So you don't have to be able to read it afterwards.
Oh, wow.
It's the act of writing it down.
Huh.
So you can fill a whole page that's been scribbled over, so none of it's legible.
Right.
But if, as you're listening to concepts, you're actually writing those letters, those words and those sentences down, then it's actually helping with your recall.
Huh.
Which I think is fascinating that even just the act of it. But you're right. It'll be interesting to see the design process, the design ideation process, if we get rid of the sketching out stage at all, where it's our reaction to and relationship with other reference images rather than us developing the shapes and the relationships with a pen or a pencil or something.
Interesting. I just find, for me, the software doesn't operate at the speed of thought, but my hand and a pencil does. So it just comes out easier. And it's also, if I'm taking notes in a notebook, I can have tabs and I can flick through certain areas and I can freely circle things and connect things. I could do that very quickly. So sitting in a meeting, taking notes on a laptop in a word processor, I can't do that. If I have a tablet and I'm drawing on a tablet, that counts to me as paper. It's just,
right.
As good. But just having that ability to jump between, less structured. It's not lines, you know.
Yeah.
It's instead of lines, it's anything you want can happen. It's too bad we don't do that more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the next thing was, who do students and juniors talk to? So. Do you get a lot of questions about these kinds of process things in your office hours?
Honestly, it's been all over the place. it seems like just about everybody that's come to talk to the team has had a different, has done it for different reasons. There's some similarity. I think the common thread is like students that are entering into the workforce, but even from there, it can be really, really different. So I haven't talked to a lot of people that is specifically about sort of the technology or software or even ways of approaching sort of, you know, ideation or development of concepts and stuff like that. It's been a lot of, how does my portfolio look?
Mm-hmm.
And that starts a conversation about why is this in your portfolio? Why is that in your portfolio? What isn't in your portfolio? You've been talking a lot about X and I don't see that in your portfolio. So stuff like that, that I think has been really helpful. There was somebody that came into somebody on the team who really wanted to get into illustration work, but who didn't know how to speak about their work and wasn't able to articulate sort of what working as an illustrator meant. And so there was lots of talk about, what do you think it means? This is what we think it means. Where are the gaps? You know, are you sure that that's what you want to do? Or what is your impression of what an illustration career is different from what the reality might be out there? So,
and do you find that people coming in, so I come in, I want to be an illustrator, do they ask to talk to an illustrator on staff, or like who are they talking to? And
some people will blank like book with everybody and
oh,
see
oh,
how
cool.
it goes.
Okay,
and then I would hope that people would talk to. Well, I mean, it's hard because we'll often talk as a group when somebody comes in for office hours. Like, oh, how did your office hours go? Or somebody will say, like, I'm very vocal and I'm talking a lot in the office about like, hey, this just happened. So I'll be like, oh, I just met with this person. Like, let me tell you about them and what they're into. And it was really interesting. And let me show you their book. And like, I'll put it on the big screen for the whole team. But not everybody gets as excited as I do. So I'm often sharing the people that I've met with.
Maybe, so it could be the owner, the CD, the associate CD, the senior designer, juniors, project managers, can
yep.
pretty much encounter anyone.
Yeah.
Seems like.
And so hopefully, Joshua, the associate creative director, he does a much better job at doing a preamble. So he reaches out the day before and says, hey, we're booked for tomorrow. Make sure you have something to talk about. I'm much more of the mind of, if you've prepared something, even if it is like Maria said, she just wanted to meet. What's your story? Let's talk about your story. This is my story. If that's like, have a sense of what you need, and then I'll walk into that meeting with as an open book, and we can talk about anything. But I like what Joshua was doing, where he's like, okay, we're going to meet for 20 minutes, not a lot of time. Have a couple questions ready, and so that we can jump in right away.
Nice. It sounds like everyone has a slightly different style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So I would hope that, you know, on the website, when you go onto the office hours page on our website.
Madebyemblem.com/office-hours.
Nice.
Check
You can see everybody's, there's a little blurb for each person about what they're about. And hopefully that will help steer people into the right question. But again, the whole point of it is that it's an informal way to talk about whatever you want to talk about the industry, and we'll answer it as best we can. I've had people, I've met with people, and then I've said, book another one. Let's talk again.
Wow.
Like, let's look at your book again. You know, I talked to somebody who said, oh, I'm going to totally redo my portfolio based on what you said. And I'm like, you don't have to do that, but like, I, you know, if you feel like that's the direction to go,
yeah, no pressure.
Sure. Like, I'm not telling you to do it, but they're like, okay, well, I really like what you said about this and this and this. I think I should, I have some other work that I really want to put in now that you've mentioned A, B, and C. And I'm like, okay, great. And then they said, okay, can I come back and show you again? I'm like, yeah, just book another office hours and we'll sit down again. And the nice thing for us is it's a 20-minute block. It's not. It's the investment on our side isn't huge, and each of us only does it once a week, so it's enough. And I think it's important to let people know that if they're booking office hours, that it isn't a huge. It doesn't take a ton of our day away, right? Like, it seems like a really big deal for especially students coming to talk to us, that it's like, oh my God, they put this time aside for us. But it's like, it's not a big investment on our side, and I think the payoff is so much outweighs the time that we're spending. I think that's, yeah. So book a meeting.
So book a meeting.
Follow-up, you know?
That's awesome. There's something to be said about, I never got sharper as a designer than when I, like, my first couple of years of teaching. I was teaching part-time and working, and I was never sharper than when people were asking me to look at their work and say something intelligent other than I like it or I don't.
Yeah.
It helps, because you're like, but why? Like,
yep.
And then, like, next time I'm working, I'm like, oh, like, it's literally what I just told the student about this. Like, you can't do it that way, or maybe, you know, it just doesn't work for some reason. So, yeah, it's like, it's almost like it's fun in a way, and beneficial to anyone, really.
Well, we did the, I told you, I gave you that example that we had this student come in and pitch us this deck,
yeah,
for this project he was working on. And a few days later, it came up that the associate creative director was like, remember what we just said to so-and-so? We need to do that in our deck. And it was like, that's exactly, so we're benefiting from that relationship too. So, you know, our thing is always about, we're always asking questions. We ask our clients questions constantly about where they see this, what the goals are of this project, so we can practically and order in an orderly fashion, itemize what, you know, how we're going to attack this project, how we're going to reach the goals so that everybody gets what they need out of this. And so when we're saying things like this to students and looking at their book and making these kinds of comments, we're taking that back and critiquing our own work afterwards too, through that same lens. So yeah, it's a win-win.
That's awesome. And Maria, did you do portfolio review, or were you more just, it sounded like you just wanted to chat and...
I just went to talk, but at the end I show him like my portfolio, and I was one of the person who was like, okay, I have to redo everything. I have to fix some parts and everything, and that's like in my pending list that I have to do, but I want to do it when I have time, like to like really spend the time that it deserves to do like a very good job. Yeah, but yeah, I went for the portfolio too, but just like as a feedback, you know, because I'm doing that, but I don't know if I'm doing well. So who is the right person to ask? Like, well, the owner.
And a lot of what we talked about wasn't about, some of it was about this work is stronger than this work, but
mm-hmm.
it was about what are you trying to say? So there
yeah.
was a lot of talk about how, yeah.
It's like to show your personality in the portfolio, like to be yourself in the portfolio. Sometimes it's hard because you are trying to show like the best of you, but sometimes it's not the best of you. The best of you is like, it's not your job, it's you.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like, I'm definitely guilty of that. My portfolio is absolutely nothing like me. You know, other than it's very dry.
Yeah, I feel like my goal with my portfolio, it's like showing your personality through your work, but it's also not getting too ahead of yourself and packaging in a way that other people, professionals, can digest it.
Mm-hmm.
So if, I don't know, for me, it kind of feels like trying to do both those things.
Do you want to tell us more about what you meant by packaging the portfolio in a way that so other professionals can digest it?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is about trying your best. So you're not going to sit with someone all the time and have them look at your portfolio, so it's trying to get in the mindset of someone who is looking at your portfolio, but maybe they don't know you at all. So explain everything to them. So with my pages on my own website, with my like case studies or whatever you can call them, I try to explain the setup, like the situation, like who is this client, what was the brief, what were my roles specifically in that project. As long as I have all that layout, all that information laid out, I feel then I can show my personality and put the fun stuff, which is the work itself. And then also it's about like maybe your homepage is like immediately someone who doesn't know you again, like can understand what you're about. Like, oh, this person is really into UX because all their projects I see are UX design or it's brand identity. And so I guess it's just about trying to articulate yourself as best as you can through your work. Yeah. Did that make sense with packaging your work?
Yeah, it made sense to me. Just that it's like, there's like a self-conscious element to portfolios, which I think it took me many years to realize that, like, I was crafting a response to specific job requirements, and I never totally thought of it that way. I thought it was like, I am just putting my work out there, and, you know, maybe that just takes a lot of conversations to come to terms with.
Mm-hmm.
You used the word case study, and then you qualified it, and you said, or whatever you want to call it. And well, I'm happy you did, because earlier we were talking about how much information like this, and perhaps it seems like the information you'll get through office hours is available on the internet, it's just out there. But this word case study is an example of where, like, you will Google that and you'll read about it, and everything you're reading is probably going to could potentially confuse you even more, because a UX case study and an advertising case study and a print design case study and a branding case study mean incredibly different things, and, you know, like, the emphasis is different at different places of the process. These are the kind of things that, unless you sit down and have a conversation that's two-way with someone who's been doing this for a significant amount of time, it's really hard to get answers that make sense or are comprehensive on that kind of nuance, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I use that word subconsciously because I hear it a lot at the office.
No, it's a good word to use. It's a great word to use.
Yeah, it's a great word. I definitely wouldn't apply that word to what I do on as like my own practice.
I'd argue that a case study is only just to articulate what the goals were,
right,
what your process getting to those goals, and then the outcome and whether or not you reach the goals. So, and that's why I don't think it needs to be exactly like you said, Eric. Like, if you go on the internet and you're like, this is what a case study is, you'll get 100 different ideas of what that would be. But ultimately, if in your website or your portfolio you're trying to communicate to a potential employer how your brain works,
mm-hmm,
you want to have your, this is what I set out to do, this is my journey to get there, this is what I ended up with, and this is why it's successful, and that's your case study, right? So
yeah, it took like someone telling me to do that, honestly, to get to that point. My first website draft was just pictures of my work, so I thought, oh, it speaks for itself. But I was speaking to someone in the industry, and they very plainly just said, we need more context, essentially.
Yeah.
And so a case study is like the best way to walk someone through. Yeah.
And I think it begs a caveat at this point that we don't have all the answers, and we're not suggesting that office hours, that we have all the answers to everything, that we're experts. I think we have a lot of experience in the fields that we work in, so we have a lot of feedback to give, but by no means is it the last word, period, on that subject. We are constantly reviewing and revising our own work. In the same way, Sarah, you're talking about this, like, we're currently redoing our website. We're trying to make it better. We're trying to communicate better. We're trying to get exactly what I just described for our case studies. That changes all the time. We go back to projects that we've already completed, and we'll tell the story differently because we want to emphasize different parts of it right now in the stage that we're at in the company, right? So yeah, it's a journey.
The learning never stops.
Yeah.
And we never stop changing, and so our portfolio changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll ask a question which may expose my ignorance when it comes to the creative world. Moving from fine arts and moving into design or commercial arts, let's say, the idea of a portfolio is it different? And was there like reprogramming to stop thinking of yourself as like an artist versus a commercial artist? I ask because a lot of our students are coming from a fine arts background. I loved arts in high school. We didn't study graphic design, but now that's what I'm studying.
Right.
Is there any insights there which are worth sharing?
Do you want to?
I think that I am less precious about the design work than I do than about the fine art.
You'd have
I used to
do.
So there was definitely a shift from sitting in a studio and throwing paint at a wall, you know, to just explore emotion, to then what does that really mean, and how are we, what are we selling by putting red next to blue, and being able to, so it's a much more informed what's moving into the commercial arts about what, you know, about it's a much, it's analytical on a very different scale. But like we talked about before, having that grounding in composition, color theory, and the elements of design, that those are universal. And so I think you're starting with a huge leg up, that you're coming at a lot of that stuff intuitively, if you have any kind of sort of fine arts background.
For me, I pretty much felt like I was going from being an illustration student to a graphic design student. And I, through talking to people in the industry and to instructors, I learned that it was sort of about separating yourself from the work. And that means many things, but it means trying to, I guess, like as an artist, you have like your own language, and that's your whole work is about your own language that you build. But then with graphic design, you're talking to many people, you're talking to the public, so it's shifting that.
Yeah.
And trying to make your work more accessible. And so for me, it felt like this is more my right side of my brain or whatever. And so I have to logically think about like what type I'm going to use, what colors I'm going to use. I have to think about all these things because they're not just like intuitive decisions anymore. They're more meaningful decisions, I guess. And then again, like that case study example, or having a case study on your website, I can't just have like, this is like literal like change I experienced, but I can't just have my work, the mediums I used and the name of the work, and have it there, have the work speak for itself. I have to have like my graphic design, my work, and I have to show my work on different mediums to show that it's actually effective. So here it is on a Instagram ad, here it is on a like a soda can, you know. So it's like almost like expanding your vocabulary so that other people can grasp what you're trying to say.
I seek out fine art because I want to be shown something to think about and digest, but commercial art is something that I see because I couldn't close the pop-up fast enough. So it's like a very different, they're very different, you know, mindsets, and we have to think about that. Maria, did you say your BA is, it was in a
business administration.
And so now, and so how, any lessons from there which you want to share with people entering the design world?
Ooh. I think in general, not just for design, and I think like business administration like helped me to learn how to organize my life and how to understand that there is always time for everything, and if you want to do something, you have to put dates and you have to organize everything and have like priorities in your life. And I think that's something that I learned like during the whole career. Also, like, I understood like the different like areas in the, like in any company, and I work in multiple companies like in different positions, so that helped me to understand like how all the business works. So I think it's going to help like to be like multifunctional like in a new company. So I think it's very useful. Like sometimes like we feel like a stress because we have like jobs that we think that is not going to help. Like for example, now I'm working in LA Fitness and I'm a receptionist. When I started there, I was like, what am I doing here? Like I studied in my home country, like I have like a lot of experience in different things, and now I am a receptionist. And I was like feeling, in the first months, I was feeling like very stressful because I was feeling that I was doing like anything, but I improved my English and I stopped like feeling the fear to talk in English with the people. So like with the time, like I know that the things that I'm living now, it's because I have to learn something. So that's how I look like the life in general. So sometimes like we feel like scared or we feel like frustrating because we don't have the things that we really want, but we really need to understand what we have to learn and learn something.
Yeah.
Checking the notes. Anyone feeling like there's something we need to get out? I do have, there are some more notes, but I want to see if I'm thinking there's anything.
I think it's good.
That's good?
Well, it's up to you.
Yeah. Okay.
What do you think, Sarah? Recovering off the office hours?
Yeah, I feel like I don't think there's anything we're missing from that. I feel like we talked a good amount about it. But, I like that you brought up the Arda coming in and doing the presentations in person.
Yeah.
I would love to see more of that.
Yeah, me too. Really, I was really surprised that he was in
that. Was it Arda?
It was Arda,
yeah. Oh, I'm not surprised. Well, he's an engineer.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's
okay.
Also, second bit of a pivot. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also only been in Canada for 2 years.
Yes.
Which it constantly blows my mind when I lived in Germany for a year and I would not have been able to go to a company and present as a student, present something to a group of strangers
German
language that's not my mother tongue, right? Like,
right.
I think it's amazing. He kept apologizing, saying like,
no,
my English isn't that great. And I'm like, oh my God, it's amazing.
Yes. I mean, I went to French grade school and I couldn't work in Quebec.
Yeah. You know, so. I lived in Quebec for I lived in Montreal for a couple of years and I went to bilingual school and then a bilingual public school and high school and then lots of years of not speaking French, but then I had to do some brush up classes because I had to be able to hire photographers in French.
Okay.
And show up on set and be able to like direct photography, you know, in French. And it was so hard. So hard. So I admire anyone who's, you know, entering into the job market where English is not their first language and they're just making it work. And I think it's fucking so incredible. Sorry, am I allowed to swear? Is there cursing allowed?
Yeah, you can decide later.
Yeah.
You know,
because I curse a lot. We're
in trouble
at the office. So, yeah.
Well, you know, actually, maybe this is a good time to mention a project I just started. I'm making a multilingual glossary of design.
Oh, cool!
Yes.
That's great.
Well, thank you. So, anyone listening who wants to contribute non-English translations, I would love that.
I can help you.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yes. So, so that's something I'm looking at. And the need arose, again, out of just talking to people. So many people in this industry are on their second career, right? Including me. My BA is in literature and history.
Right.
And I thought I would be, like, editing textbooks, right? And then I was just like, nope. So I'd rather make the textbook. So I ended up studying design. And it's such a common thing. Whether, you know, wherever you're from, it seems like so many people come here after something else.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's the Island of Misfit Toys. All the more reason to have these communities and like office hours where we can kind of talk and commiserate, I guess, a little bit. But
yeah, I wish we could offer office hours in different languages. But I don't think we... Well, I'll ask the group.
You can do French. You start there.
You can practice.
Yeah,
it's a great way to practice. Yeah.
Mise en page is one of my... Mise en page and espace fin in French are the two things that I thought were so much better in French than they are in English. And mise en page is just like the layout.
Put on tape.
Yeah. And the espace fin, which is a small a fine space that's in between the punctuation, so before the question mark or exclamation mark or the quotes and stuff,
right?
And so there's a few things, a few words in French that I still think of when I'm designing that I wish were part of my regular vocabulary. That's like
all you got is sans and serif.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's all we got. Which might even be Latin. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's too bad. No. All right, well, we're 46 minutes in, and
wow, That went by fast, eh?
Mm-hmm. It did go by super fast. Yeah, I kept looking and I was like, oh my God. We keep going. I mean, sometimes I record for 45 minutes, sometimes I record for 2 hours. It's really up to the group. But we're through the list of everything.
Oh, are we?
Yeah, okay.
I was gonna...
Here was the list. Office hours project. What is it? Who does it? Should students get... should we get students in the call who has used office hours? Oh, hi, Maria. Nope. How do you get there? That's the URL. Who will you be talking to? Who else can take advantage? Mm-hmm. Maybe we can get into that. I can launch us into that if you want to. It's who else can take advantage of office hours, and Eric's notes were anyone. Mm-hmm. We've been meeting with students, photographers, illustrators, people looking to pivot their careers, people starting a new business.
Yeah.
I can throw us into that.
And yeah, then we covered a bit of that already, but...
We did.
I think I feel like I can't speak to everybody's office hours experience.
Sure.
I can only offer my own. So if there were any... I don't know if you remember anybody talking about other office hours they had that give a different perspective in terms of who's doing it or what they're getting out of it. I know that... I mean, one of the things that I don't want to... Oh, well, maybe we could talk about, actually, is if you book an office hours, show up.
Oh.
Oh, my God. There is people who doesn't show up?
Yeah, we get no shows. And I... And... You know, we joke around a little bit at the office that it's like, well, that's not, you know, that's not cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can launch us into this.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
So, speaking of coming from all different kind of industries, this is an industry where, I guess, like, promptness and meeting deadlines is super important. Because if the event's on Friday and it needs to go to print on Wednesday because it has to dry on Thursday, like, you have to do it. So, Eric, what happens if someone books office hours and isn't there on time or isn't there at all? Does that happen?
Yep. So, it's not great, to be honest. We are offering up our time in a generous and meaningful way, and I think we're really easy to talk to, and we have so much to offer. We expect that if somebody books a time, that they show up for that time. If, of course, shit happens, and I get that, and so we've had people cancel, and that's absolutely fine. We've had people say, "Look, I'm stuck in traffic. It's 15 minutes away from my time, and I'm not going to make it." You know, whether or not that's true, it's still letting us know, and I think that's really great. I had somebody not show up recently, and I was kind of like. I was wondering whether or not to send a follow up saying, "Hey, you didn't show up to office hours." Just wondering, and I'm like, "What? No, I'm not going to do that." If you book an office hours, I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah.
So show up, and we'll have a great chat. And but if you can't make it, just let us know that you can't make it.
Right.
And then beyond that too, it's an opportunity for you to try out going into a meeting. So. Be prepared, present yourself in a way that you get as much out of it as you want. If you want to come, like Maria said, and just sort of get to know somebody and say, "What's your story like in the industry? I want to know what your day looks like." But if you want to try on applying for a job, or you want to try on presenting your portfolio, or coming in and pitching us a deck, you know, to see what that will feel like when you have to do that in real life, as it were, then come dress the part, prepared for the part, all that kind of stuff. Get out of it what you want to get out of it. Because we have, because it's only 20 minutes, if somebody comes in and they don't really know what they want, or they haven't really prepared, or they don't know what they want to get out of it, then they're not going to get as much out of it, is my thinking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that kind of also is good advice for anything in general in the professional world. If you're going to an interview, have some questions ready. Show that you're interested. Show that you've done your research. Like, show that you care is really important, and I think a lot of people appreciate that.
Look up their work.
Yeah.
You know. Look up their work. Know their work. Think of, digest something they've done so that you could say, "Hey, I really loved that one thing you did with that." That one company for that thing because of a thing,
mm-hmm.
And not just like, because they're going to ask you, oh, what'd you like about it? And then you're going to be like, holy shit.
That's right, yeah.
And also the person, like, you know the name. Like, now it's too easy to find the person, like, everywhere.
Yeah,
you can
absolutely.
Find, like, professional and personal life in internet. You can search in Google and you can find, like, everything. Also the family. So you can find, like, everything. Like, if you don't know something, like, you can Google it and that's it. But if you go in, like, no, like, if you don't know nothing, like, they are going to know that you don't know nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you don't show up, like, it's a free advice. Mm. It's not easy to reach someone that it's, like, in a high position. And they give you, like, the opportunity to do it. Like, how you are not going to show up, like, to the interview? Like, it says, like, more than you. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It's a small industry, too. Like, it's not, but it is.
Yeah.
It's very small, like... Like, there's a limited number of events, and there's a limited number of people who go, and each of those person is connected to the person who didn't go. And at the end of it, like, it's very, very small.
Which is great. It's what I love. And Sarah was awesome at the ADCC. It's like, you got to go and talk to two people.
No.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to go talk to two people. And it's funny that, like, I keep telling people that come into office hours, like, reach out and make a couple of connections. So yeah, I love that, Sarah, you're pushing us to do the same thing. But it's like just follow. Because the community is so small, you're bound to that's where your job is gonna come from. It's gonna be that you met somebody who introduced you to somebody and they know somebody, and then it comes around, it's like, oh, I know that person, and then that turns into something. And I'm not saying that the only way into a job is by who you know, but it makes getting work and connecting with people that much easier.
And
yeah.
You never know who are you going to meet. You
yeah.
don't know.
Yeah.
Like, maybe
yes.
you can find your next boss. Like,
yep.
you don't know that. Just,
and
like,
yeah.
go.
It's the same thing with us for new business development. Like our clients that we have... Some of the clients we have come from the most unexpected places, and we'll spend tons of time working on RFPs and pitch decks and all this kind of thing. And then I bump into somebody at the building, like I bumped into somebody at the building today, and she was like, oh, we got to hire you guys to do this branding project for us. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's, you never know where it's going to come from, right?
Be nice to everyone.
Exactly.
Because it's so true. It's so true.
It's, be nice and send follow-up thank you notes.
yeah. Well, and I wanted to say too, I wanted to give you props because you were a great interview when you came to interview for the internship. I remember that you, because you did all that stuff that you're talking about, and you showed interest, and we had things to talk about. And it's funny because I do it without even thinking about it, but at the end of an interview I'm like, is there anything else we need to talk about, do you have any questions? And I literally do it as the ending to a thing, like, is there something we've forgotten that we need to, like,
mm-hmm.
do we have our test? And so I don't see it as a test, but the people that are like, actually, I do have a question, here's an unrelated thing, how do you feel about pineapple on your pizza?
Right.
Or it can be something funny, it can be whatever, but, and anyway, so I think that those are little tricks that when you have them at the ready, it's really great.
It's a good... Go ahead.
It's smart because the people is going to remember you because you did something unique.
Yeah.
You spoke.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Everyone else is saying, I'm an independent thinking team worker who's deeply motivated with driven passion for success, like the ChatGPT.
Yeah, exactly.
So someone who has their own voice.
Yeah.
I actually have a question, an answer. No, a question. An answer to the question, which is a question. Which I use, although it's slightly cheeky and I'm not sure how everyone reacts to it, but when they say, is there anything else, I say, yes. Is there anything else you need me to demonstrate, which I haven't, that would keep me from being the best candidate for this position?
Yeah.
And some people react to it very well because they have a sense of humor, and some people don't.
Yeah.
So I don't recommend people do that, but it's just like something.
Yeah.
Feel it out. What are some good questions you've had in interviews, Eric? Any good from the candidate?
I'm trying to think. They're mostly pretty.
Do you remember what you asked?
I'm trying to remember what yours was.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, and I don't remember, but something I do like to ask is, I ask...
Are you interviewing behind Eric's back?
If I'm previous, like, interviews... Oh my god, making me sweat. No. No. I like to ask, regardless of their position, like, what is their experience working there? Like, what is the culture like for them?
Yeah, and I think that's what you did.
I probably did.
Because I liked that. It's about... so another person that we hired recently, I keep showing her cover letter as an example of the perfect cover letter.
Can I have it?
And, yep.
Can I have it?
And then, and
me
then
too,
Sarah's
please.
Sarah's was the question at the end, and it was about the work. I can't remember how it was phrased, but it was phrased as something like, "What does a day look like at Made by Emma?"
Yeah.
Like what does it look like? Yeah, a day in the life at Emblem for fun. Like, what do you guys do for fun or something like that?
Nice.
And so it took it out of like, let's talk about the work or specifics about the job or these kinds of things, and just turned it into the
mm-hmm.
what the mood in the office is or what
yeah.
the sort of personality of the corporate culture,
yeah.
as it were.
It's basically asking, do you like working here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which
right.
was great. And then
yeah.
we talked and laughed about like. Yeah, we try to have fun, and it's a small
yeah.
group, and there's the dynamics, and yeah.
Eric, you just mentioned that you remembered it was a good cover letter. This is another one of those things where if you rely on the wisdom of Google,
mm-hmm.
you will probably come away thinking that the cover letter is dead, and you don't need to write a cover letter,
mm-hmm.
and recruiters don't read them. And I love cover letters because I like writing, and if you give me a couple paragraphs, I'll do something useful. But what makes... Yeah, who is reading cover letters? Are people reading cover letters? And what makes a good cover letter?
Oh boy.
It's not fair for me to ask this because you didn't come here for this.
No, that's fine. Yeah, it's like office hours.
Yeah.
I'm happy to give my opinion
right.
on any and
okay.
anything and everything. Who's reading? So I've heard people say that like computers are reading your cover letter.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they're
AI.
Looking for this. So there are robots that are reading your cover letter and your resume, so it must be formatted in a certain way and cover off a few elements, blah, blah, blah. Depends on the kind of job you're applying to.
Yes.
For work, like I said before, we're a small team. There's six of us in the office. And so every one of us is reading your cover letter.
Yeah.
And so the reason why this cover letter from Christina was so good is that it addressed all of us. It said... It addressed it to Eric Moore and the Made by Emblem team or something. And then it was, not only was it really well written, it talked, like you said, about projects from our website that she really liked the work that we'd done. And not just that she liked it, but that it resonated with her for the following reasons. And that's the kind of work she aspires to do more of in her career. So I think, and I say this a lot to students about showing that you have enthusiasm and a willingness to learn, right? That every opportunity is every opportunity that's presented to you, that you're trying to make the most of it, and that it's about learning. So I think conversely, like the worst cover letter is, I'm an expert at X, Y, and Z, hire me. It's like, well, if you are fresh out of school, you're not really an expert at those things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no amount of telling me that you are that's going to make it any better. So so showing that you have a passion for this work that's happening, that you have that you have done some research in the company that you're applying to. Oh, the worst is like, dear hiring manager. Right? So so that you've done a little bit of research into the... And I want to be clear, too, that it's not about stroking somebody's ego and about saying you're the greatest and the work you do is the coolest thing ever and that's so great. It's about saying, I've done a bit of work here and I think your work resonates with what I want to be doing. So I want to learn from you. I want to work within this group of people because I think I'll be able to do my best work if I'm there. And so if you can communicate that in the cover letter, I think that's the real gem, is those ones. So Christina's cover letter was like, it was, it had all that stuff. We got a poem recently.
Oh, wow.
It was just a poem.
Huh. Risk.
And it was kind of awesome. My first thought was like, this is this is really wild. This is really different. And I was like, what's going on? And then I, like I do for just about everything at the office, is I share it with the whole team. And I was like, so I got a poem as like a, just a cold email, somebody looking for work.
Huh.
And so we put it up on the board, and then we looked, and it was enough. Here's the interesting thing. It was enough that it stopped me. I shared it with the group. It made us look at her portfolio. It made us go through everything that she'd done, all of her work, read about her thoughts on her work. There were like additional websites off of her main website that delved into like really, really deep sort of experiential presentation sort of projects that were less commercial and more artistic. But we went through the whole thing.
Wow.
And so in retrospect, I was kind of like, the poem wasn't like award-winning poetry, but it was enough that it like got us interested and curious, and so we explored more, and I think that is a big part of it's taking risks, taking a big swing, and getting people's attention.
That's great. I love cover letters. I'm always advocating for them. So this is
yeah,
selfish,
no, I think especially the size of the company. So again, if
yes.
you're if you and you the only way you know that is by doing your research.
Yeah.
So you
yes.
figure out, you identify the company because of the work that they do, the size of the company, and you think that you're a good match, and then you reach out. You know who the people are that you're reaching out to. You know who's going to be reading it, and who, you know, it doesn't. You don't have to stalk them on Facebook, but you at least get an idea on LinkedIn of who they are, what they're.
Yeah,
typing.
That's what Maria does.
Yeah. I mean, level of stalking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good. There's a difference between the Indeed job posting with 2,000
yeah.
applicants, and maybe a machine is reading it, but probably not. And you know, and applying to something like Made by Emblem, where a human being is carefully selecting who they hang out with.
Yeah.
It's completely
mm-hmm.
different.
And for our last round of hiring, we got something like 150 applications, and we narrowed it down to 10 people that we interviewed in person, and then from that 10, we narrowed it down to the top 3, and then we did our hiring from there. So, so it's a lot, and that's for a small. That's we're not one of the big guys, you
yeah.
know. Like we're a small company that not a lot of people would necessarily know about, but.
I bet you put more, as a percentage, significantly more of your time into finding talent than a big company.
Yeah, probably.
Like,
because
no
it's
doubt.
Because it's such a, you know, we're increasing our, by hiring one person, we're increasing our workforce by like
right.
you know, 20%. So like,
it represents
yeah.
a larger investment,
yeah.
therefore gets more. Yeah. Which is great, which is actually why if I was starting now, I would definitely start somewhere like Made by Emblem or like any of the numerous amazing agencies and studios in Toronto that are less than say 20 people
yeah.
Rather than Leo or
sure.
something.
But it might be harder to get in, and I think that's a tricky, so if it's harder to get in but it might be easier, like
do
the larger agencies have
projects?
More turnover too though, right? So
yes.
if they have a big contract, they win a big client, they have a big contract and they have to hire 100 people all of a sudden, or not 100, I don't know, maybe like 20, 30 people all of a sudden, and then if they lose a client, then they let, you know, 20, 30, 50 people go.
Yeah.
So you run that risk, but you might get in the door and get some a year's worth of experience, and then you move on to something. But I don't know. That's also a whole other area. That,
it is.
Yeah, leapfrogging versus...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, like, I that, that's been...
No.
I don't know what it's called, but I've always just been big companies and mass applications, and I regret that. So maybe I'm just, like... advising because I regret my choices, so
right.
I'm advising to do the opposite. But in some ways, it's almost, I would, easier is not the right word, but the challenge of applying to a smaller company affords you the ability to be more strategic and direct, because it's a voice, and you can respond in a voice that is listening, because they're
yeah.
actually reading your cover letters.
Yeah.
So I've had many, many students say to me, this is where I want to work, and we craft, and we craft, and we craft, and they always get an interview. And
that's
sometimes
great.
They get hired. It's very different if you want to work at, I don't know, Saatchi. It's like
right.
just
yeah.
apply and cross your fingers because it's
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
it's but yeah. So I don't know. I think you can, if you find a place that you're a fit and you really are, that they will recognize that. And so there's that too.
Yeah.
Maybe, anyways. Who knows?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. Yeah, almost all of our... Yeah, we have two people who've been there for 4 years that were... Four or five years? Anyway.
That's amazing in the city. For anyone listening who thinks that's not
and
long,
they were hired after internships.
That's very long. Like,
yeah.
Very long. Especially for your first job. Usually
yeah.
Most people do their internship, they sweat it out for months, and then they're out the door.
Yeah. So we have a pretty good... I think that has to do with exactly what you're talking about, where we take a lot of care in figuring out who's going to come on and join us, join our team, and then if it's a right fit, then there's often continued work there. So that's why when we say we're not taking on an intern, it's not because we're being flippant about it. It's like we take it really seriously. So we got to make sure that if we're taking on an intern, that it's because we really need that. We've created a new position, and we're really trying to figure out a person who's going to be right for that new position.
Awesome. Maria, do you have anything to add?
Well, I think like regarding that you said about to work in a small company and it's hard to stay like in a small company, I think it's much better to start in a small company because the people listen to you and they have the time to explain to you something that maybe you don't know how to do it. And also you can learn even more. Because you have to do more roles. It's not like, oh, this person has to put the colors, this person has to do this thing. And there are no too many people to divide the tasks. Like everyone work together. So you learn things that you don't know that things exist. So I think like it's very good to start in a small agency. Like in my mind, like what I want is like a small agency because of that, because like you can learn more. Not just to focus in, oh, I did marketing and I'm just going to focus in marketing and like whatever I have to do is just like one task and I just have to complete that task. It's like something like, well, it's not simple, but it's like easier than if you start in a small company and you're going to learn a lot, much more like if you're in a big company. It's going to be harder in the beginning, of course, but it's going to be good at the end.
Yeah, it's very true. That's exactly like one of the perks of working in a smaller like agency, and I have the even greater perk of sitting next to Eric. And so the amount of times where he can see over my screen and sees me struggling like in Photoshop or After Effects, and he kind of just like watches for a bit, and then he'll let me know like a quicker way to do it, whatever it is I'm doing. And that's always, I always appreciate that. I feel like you let me struggle a little bit, and then you're like, "Hey, what's going on here?" That's been really great. I've learned a lot just through that. Yeah.
Nice. I'm sure he's just waiting because he figures you're gonna figure it out. Not because he wants to watch you struggle. He's
yeah,
like,
right.
"She's gonna figure it out."
Right.
Yeah,
you have some faith in me.
Yeah, for sure. All right. All right, well, we're through the list. Definitely through the list. I'm having fun. So
yeah, this is great.
Yeah, I'll keep talking, but I have no prompts left. No segues, no prompts.
That's all right.
Yeah, I'm having a good time.
Me too.
It's
nice. I didn't realize that working at a small company would be such a bonus. Not such a bonus, but because you make a really good point, Maria, that working at a smaller company is, and again, I'm not trying to, this isn't a sales pitch for Made by Emblem because we're not hiring, but working at a small company, exactly that. I was snickering a little bit because we've been getting, when Sarah started, we were throwing her into the fire for everything. She was doing a little bit of videography, a little bit of photography. She was building sets for things.
She's perfect one person
like,
for it, though.
Yeah, like, and yeah. So there was all kinds of stuff to do that was varied. So exactly what you're describing, Maria, but like, you know, you go into a place, you get exposed to every part of the company. When it's a small company, you're able to get a sense of how the inner workings, what all the minutiae, the inner workings. And like we talk openly about, if we're doing a pitch deck to try and get new business, we talk about it as a group. It's like, we'll present it. And it's like, this is what we got. This is our, you know, and then everybody has the opportunity, whether it's the intern or the associate creative director or whoever is like, I think that page is weird. What are you trying to say with that page? And then it's like, okay, well, okay. Yeah, we're trying to say this. It's like, well, I didn't get that. It's like, okay, maybe we need to rethink how we're how we're selling that part of this pitch. Yeah. So, yeah. And actually, and I didn't really think about that connection that when I started my, like my experience I was describing of this, this person that hired me that gave me these projects every day to finish, and that was a really small company. And so it was, that I was only able to learn in that way because it was a small group too, so.
Yeah, you learn through experience, but sometimes the people is like afraid or they are like lazy to do a lot of things or they just want to be in the comfort zone and they don't want to learn.
Yeah, I'll go work at Bell or Rogers and make direct mail pieces for the rest of your life. That's really though. Like I shouldn't say it like that because I've done tons of work. I've done tons of basic production work. I love it. It's zen. I zone out and I get it done and you get paid and it's awesome. But I don't know if I would want to do 25 years of it. And if you aren't willing to take some risks, even small risks, that's what happens. So you know. Maybe we'll cut that part out. Sounds bad.
Yeah, but no. I worked at like so. There was a time when I was a freelance art director that when magazines were going through troubling times, I would jump in and I would get a few issues out the door, so that they could regroup. And so, I did some issues of Flair and Fashion and. Style advisor and so a bunch of like fashiony things, but working at Rogers and St. Joe's in those in the big Rogers Tower where there's just a sea of cubicles and you can just so as I would imagine, and it's totally different now and that's ancient history, but I can imagine getting a job as a young designer going in and working in a cubicle where you don't even have somebody to talk to you can work all day without getting any real feedback on what you're doing, so that might be kind of frustrating.
Right, and you don't grow, and you get the same work, and there's no challenge, and like it sounds scary. Like maybe some people will be intimidated when Sarah says like they're just gonna throw all kinds of stuff at you, or Maria said that. But if that doesn't happen, then 5 years goes by, and you're still doing the same thing, and 10 years goes by, and you're still doing the same thing, and that's not always good. That's not always healthy, so it's important to like find these places that will push you a little bit. It's healthy.
Yeah, especially when you're starting out and you don't have your path set out for you yet. You don't like you can't imagine what you'll be doing in 5 years. Why not try all of these things and be open to it? Because you don't have an answer for yourself yet, so. Try what you don't know, and I very much appreciate that. Like doing all of those things, I'm like, yeah, why not? Like let's figure it out as we go. I've had a lot of fun doing things that I thought I wouldn't really like.
Yeah. But yeah. And that said, there are big companies who will just ask and ask and ask and ask. So I worked mostly in house. I worked for a law firm on Bay Street, and like I learned animation because they said, can you do animation? So in-house is different because they don't have, there's not, the person beside you doesn't know if there is a person beside you. They don't know that. And there's not like an animator and there's no network, right? Small industry, there's networks. Oh, I know someone. It's not like that. So they'll ask you and you could say no and you won't get in trouble because you weren't hired for that. But you can say yes. So there are big companies out there. When I say big, I mean like 100,000 people or more where you can grow. So it's not like it's impossible, but, you know,
yeah, it's hard for small companies to make that, to provide enough, challenging skills development stuff. That's the one thing about when you work for a larger company, I would be sent to technical training stuff. Like when I'm old, when InDesign came out, we got sent to like learn how to use InDesign and InCopy and things like that. Like, so we were constantly, I worked at companies where they would send you out to get skills training in different types of apps or, you know, if you should recently, I guess if you showed an interest in like UX, they'd send you to get accreditation as a UX designer, sure, or whatever, to like up your skills. And so in the smaller companies, you're relying on the immediate team to sort of build those skills and that kind of thing. So
yeah, that's fair. Like I got sent my 2 employers ago. Yeah, they sent me to like a film school crash course for Premiere, and that's
right,
how
yeah.
I learned. That's part of how I learned Premiere,
yeah.
Because to them, $1,500, like on tomorrow, without even thinking about it, is like, no, we need this in 2 weeks. Go.
Yeah,
get the
yeah,
money.
Yeah.
It's not even.
Well, and maybe that doesn't happen anymore just because of the internet. Maybe we're all just on
YouTube, yeah,
being taught how to use After Effects.
Or, yeah.
It
could be.
Never mind.
Yeah. Well, no, that's fair too. I mean, that's how I learned HTML, CSS. So you know, I mean. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
It's, yeah. But it's at least, the other thing is it's definitely an industry that rewards your work. I think it often rewards your work in ways other industries might not. Like, what am I trying to say? I don't know what I'm trying to say. Does anyone know what I'm trying to say?
No.
Well, if you're carrying bricks, and you carry 100 bricks, and the next day you carry 110 bricks, and you put some mortar down. That's like no one's going to notice, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're every day churning out, you know, if you're St. Joseph's Communication and you're churning out magazines, and then one day you say, "I'm going to learn a little bit of like this other skill," that skill will pay off, almost always, if you find somewhere to apply it.
Yeah.
I think that's what I mean.
Yeah. I think there's a danger in there, and that is that there is, that I think you touched on this a bit, is that your role and the sort of job creep, if that is such a thing.
The unicornification of
yeah.
it. Yeah.
So then you can only, we don't hire graphic designers anymore, we hire graphic designers that are also animators and video editors and videographers and sound technicians and, you know, and I think that's dangerous,
mm.
you know, in a way, because I feel like it you're expected to know so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right that it's that same willingness to learn and when you're presented with a challenge, meeting it head on and thinking creatively about how to come to a solution. And if that means learning a bit of a new piece of software in order to prototype a thing to get it sold so that we can get a real team to like produce it at the end or
yeah.
something, that might be what more of what but yeah, it's
yeah
yeah.
I guess if you're a surgeon and at late at night you're secretly dissecting humans, the college is not going to appreciate that, the college of
no.
medicine, right?
No.
But if you're, you know, upskilling a little bit, then there'll be some work for you and there'll possibly be some future benefits.
Yeah. Well, and so one of the things I liked about one of your podcast guests who I listened to recently.
Leo was the last one.
Oh, I think
from
it's
Germany, photographer.
From Zach.
Oh, Nicole.
Director
Nicole.
Yes.
And she mentioned that, I think you were talking about things that you learn in school and how that translated into the job market once she was into her position. And she said something that I thought was really great, and it was about how even if she wasn't expected to do to edit a video or
right.
create something in After Effects, she was able to speak about the storyboarding process. She was familiar enough with it that she could speak that language really easily and understood what it meant, which would lead to a creative outcome faster or more easily or with more effective communication. So and I like that idea that even if you're not an expert in those things, you don't have to learn the skill to be an expert at it, but in order to be able to talk about it
yeah.
effectively. Yeah.
I didn't say at the time, but I've definitely had conversations with art directors where like I just wanted to put down a hard no because it wasn't getting through. Like, this is why we can't do that, and this
right.
is a production thing that we need to consider. And it was just like, but can you do it? And I was like, it's a production thing we need to consider. And I really wish that they had a little bit of, like, for me to bite into. But hey, what can you do? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's really great when you can, because and everything's changing so fast. And it's I think that is important. It's important to stay on top of on top of the technology and on top of what the trends are, so that you can speak that language.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, candidly, on this public broadcast, the schools are always a little bit behind.
Yeah,
and
sure.
They're huge. And there's government requirements. You set learning goals, and those have to remain until the next time you set the learning goals. So for any students listening, there's like, you really have to also do it yourself a little bit, just a little bit. And that is fine, because that will be the rest of your life. You know, you don't have to be fully up to date on every single thing, but you should definitely maintain a certain level. You know, I'm forcing myself to learn AI, even though I hate it, but I know I have to, so I do.
Well, and I think, yeah, like we talked about before, that eagerness to learn, that enthusiasm, that curiosity,
mm-hmm.
I think those are all elements that really, being able to explain that, that's what you're being able to communicate that to people, and for that to be true, that you have those. Yeah, there was a sentence in there somewhere.
Yeah. Maybe we're done. It's six.
Okay, yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's the most my brain can handle. Do you need a wrap up? Do you need like a?
Sometimes we record one, and sometimes we don't. Maybe we'll just use this.
Is this done yet?
Is this done yet? Slowly fading some music.
Perfect.
Crack a beer open. I mean, we could do a wrap up. Sometimes I just say thank you. And we just go around the room and say thanks everyone, and you know, that was great. Is there any? I don't
thank
even like
you
remember
that.
The. You're welcome. Thank you for coming. Yeah, let's just wrap it up. I'll just record an outro and I'll say goodbye.
Sure.
And I'll cut it together. I'll make it happen.
Okay.
Well, I really want to thank everyone for coming today. It's been such a good conversation. Just in case anyone doesn't remember. It's madebyemblem.com/office-hours. And they're 20-minute sessions. You can speak to anyone working at Made by Emblem. And they all, you know, you can request certain job titles. And the topics are whatever you choose. So it's literally just open office hours. Thank you to Eric for providing these.
Thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you. And Maria, thanks for joining today.
Thank you so much for inviting me too.
And Sarah, it's so great you could come back.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Eric.
All right.
This is fun.
Thanks, everyone.
Yay.
Yay.
Yay. No one's ever clapped.
it's the Christina.
No one's ever clapped before.
That's right. Christina's always clapping.
Please have another slice of pizza, because I can't eat that.
I will, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. When to keep eating.
Yeah, 1 hour 21. That's actually amazing.
Wow.
For me.
That's
no,
so
I'm so. Well, it is, but sometimes you get 2 hours, and I'm like, basically, I look what people listen, and it drops off after half an hour.
Right.
So I like to do 45 minutes, because half an hour is usually not enough. Anyways,
yeah.
So 1:20 is fine. It's a lot of me just babbling that will be gone. So that'll get us down, no problem.
Well, I hope you can make me make sense. I babble too, and it very rarely.
Right.
Has a point. I trail off.
I don't know. I don't think there was any trailing.
I don't think so either.
No.
All right, good.
Mm-hmm. We were very good at staying on topic.
Okay, good. I've been working hard at it.
Yeah.
Should I get the bottle of wine?
No.
I'll have a glass of wine.
I'm okay.
All right.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, you're gonna
lie. Yeah,
I'm okay.
What did I do here? That. Oh, this.
Did I take it out? Oh. Look at that. Washrooms. Do you need to know where they are? Does anyone need them? Yeah,
I'm okay.
Where they are.
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I found
them
already.
It's at the end of the hall.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. We need more BT. I guess nothing really happened.
I took pictures.
You took some pictures? Okay,
yeah,
good.
But, I don't have too many.
Well, that was fun. Thanks, Maria, for coming all the way out here.
Thank you for letting me know. I was here.
You were here.
I was in glasses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
I was thinking that we are going to another place.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because if it was here, I can be here at 3 p.m. Or even early. But because you said that we are going to...
That's fine. I wanted it to be later. Anyway,
okay.
So yeah, I think it was more me. You apologized earlier too, and I was no, I think it's
mostly
me.
When you said both of you were we can do that the whole day. It was Yeah, I was here in classes. And class was at 12:30. Yeah.
Did it take you long to get here, Eric?
No.
Do you live close?
30 minutes.
Mm.
Oh, no, I'm from the office.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised at how fast it went. I'm really disappointed. I bought this.